Hi, welcome to Backstage Soundtrack. I'm Tom from Hot Tub Time Machine. This week, I'm chatting to Jack from Bag Raiders. I'm recording this in October 2021 from quarantine in Adelaide, where due to COVID restrictions, I have to spend 2 weeks in ISO before traveling to West Australia to perform at Wine Machine Perth. This time last year in 2020, I was actually doing the exact same thing, but I was lucky enough to be able to quarantine with Jack. We didn't know each other at all at the start, but by the end we'd become mates and I kind of fell in love with his passion for obscure, different music. There was one night where we sat around in the back garden, sharing a joint, my first one in about a decade, and while I dealt with some mild paranoia, Jack played song after song from artists I'd never heard from all over the globe. This podcast is a bit like that. We delve into West African drumming, Zimbabwean thumb pianos, Japanese solo piano music, as well as East 17, Dua Lipa, Daft Punk, and much more. If you hear a song you like, and I reckon you will, there's a Spotify playlist of all the songs in the episode description. A few quick Bag Raiders facts before we get started. Jack started Bag Raiders with his school friend Chris in the mid-2000s, and they released their debut self-titled album in 2009. It was super successful at the time, but one song on it, Shooting Stars, has managed to rise again and again, and it's become a true classic of Aussie music. Jack and Chris continue to release innovative, lush music and perform all over the world. Check them out. Okay, let's get into it. Jack and I spoke in September 2021 over Zoom from our homes in lockdown Sydney. So what's the last thing you listened to, Jack? If we were to go to your phone, would it be a podcast? Would it be music? What's the last thing you put on to...
Probably a podcast. I've been devouring podcasts lately.
What's your poison?
And listening to. Oh man, I'm sort of all over the place. There's a BBC one called In Our Time that I like.
Oh yeah. What's that about?
Yeah, they just sort of pick a topic. Normally something historical. Like there was a good one on Shakespeare's sonnets the other day. Recommend that.
Hello. In 1609, Thomas Thorpe published Shakespeare's sonnets, never before imprinted. It said. And unlike the plays, they were never again reprinted in the poet's lifetime.
Yeah. That kind of thing. And then I go, then I swing full lowbrow and listen to like football, you know, like Premier League.
Of course. Yeah. All right. What music do you put on at the moment to chill out to?
Something I have on in the background when I'm cooking dinner.
Yeah.
Do you ever
do you ever put on music when you're just like, okay, I need something to just take it down a little bit and to give me a bit of space?
I do, but look, I reckon I do. I probably do less than most people because I've been listening to music all day. So it's like for example, I mean, I don't have a car anymore, but when I used to have a car, I never put the radio on in the car.
Right.
I love that blessed silence, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of good to give your ears a break. But I will put stuff on from time to time, and it's normally like pretty chilled out stuff like ambient or...
What kind of ambient? Give me some names.
There's an album I'm loving at the moment by this guy called Huerco S, H-U-E-R-C-O-S. He's an American guy. I think he lives in Berlin.
Huerco S.
Yeah.
A Sea of Love. Let's have a check. I want to check it out.
Yeah. That's a good one. That whole album is dope.
How ambient are we talking here? Like super ambient?
Nah, like it's not just drone, like there's melodies and stuff, but it's pretty repetitive and just like waves of sound kind of thing.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's nice.
Do you have that work ethic of like, you get up and you work on music?
I don't have a schedule. I should be better at that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm always working on something. And like now having an enforced studio at home, like I'm actually kind of loving it. I think it's one of those things like I'll do it for a year and I'll love it. And then I'll be like, oh my God, I need to get the fuck out of here and want to get another studio. But for the moment, it's actually been really cool. Like, and I'm happy just sort of pottering around and doing house stuff. And, you know, I live by myself, so it's kind of like I have the run of the place and I work for a bit and then I make lunch and then, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Kind of just like homebody stuff.
I'm the same way. I used to like always work in a studio when I was doing TV sound stuff. I would go to work and I liked that because when you walked out of the studio, it was done. And so I had that real work-life separation. But now, like, I don't ever want to work somewhere other than my home. It's kind of like, I really love that I can just work and then immediately be with the kids, or like if I feel like doing something, I can go and do it. It's I like it. I like working from home.
I wonder how many people like in the world will just never go back to their office like ever again.
Yeah.
They've tasted the other side.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. Definitely a thing.
Yeah.
I want to get a bit into your musical history, Jack.
Yep.
Is your family musical? Do your folks play music? Did you grow up with much around the house?
My folks play music, but they don't, I mean, they listen to music. They don't really play anything. But they're into it. My dad especially, he would always play a lot of music.
Okay.
But his mum was really pretty musical, so maybe I got that from her. Maybe it skips a generation or something.
What does she do?
But she was a piano player like I am, and like classical. I used to have to go to her house and get lessons as a kid, which was fucking terrifying. I used to hate it. She was not generous to me because I was related to her.
When did you start piano?
I was young, maybe four or five, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hectic.
Yeah.
And doing lessons and reading music and stuff from that young.
Yeah, I had a funny beginning though, because we didn't have a piano. So my dad just like drew a keyboard like on a big sheet of cardboard, and then I would come home and like play on the cardboard, and he would kind of hum the notes, but like he's got no idea. Like I often wonder how far that set me back, you know, at that early stage.
It's interesting though, as a parent with young kids though, like he was keen, you know what I mean? Like that stuff doesn't happen unless you're going, I am going to get some music in this kid's life, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it's cool. I mean, obviously it sort of paid off for me, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have any like pop songs that resonated with you when you were a kid? Like what's an early, like for me it was Michael Jackson's Thriller, I think was the first cassette that I had or something like that.
I like Michael Jackson, I guess. My pop stuff wasn't that cool. I used to really like E17 and.
Like they did It's All Right, didn't they, E17?
Yep. I used to like a song called Gold. If you're going to play one, play Gold.
Gold.
That's a deep cut.
Gold by E17. All right, let's check that shit out. Ooh. They're from Northern Ireland, aren't they?
Yeah, something like that. It's, wow.
To me, there's something like that kind of pop dance music at that time was quite slow.
Yeah, man, it's so much more like epic than I remembered with those strings and stuff. It's really like...
I think they were pretty into epic things. I mean, It's All Right being the only other song I know.
They were into epic beanies, that's for sure.
But yeah, that late 80s, early 90s stuff where dance music wasn't quite a thing yet, but they had the sounds and things, and it was slow and there's rapping over top. KLF. People are always on me to play KLF in like my shows and my streams, and I just don't get it. I don't dig it. Were you in school bands and orchestras and stuff? I guess it was hard with the piano. Oh, you were?
Yeah, yes. Even so, I did a lot of stuff. I used to play drum kit as well, so I would do that in the concert band and stuff. And in the orchestra, I played... Oh, I did something. I think I played timpani or something in the orchestra.
Far out.
Yeah. So I did it all. I mean, not none of that to a high standard at all. But yeah, I was doing it. In fact, that's kind of where me and Chris, because we went to the same high school, that's where we started hanging out. We were kind of like, you know, the cool kids in orchestra, which isn't saying much, but yeah.
No, it is, mate. Hey, look, everyone I'm talking to about that musical history, who's now a musician, was the cool kid in the orchestra.
It's true, yeah.
I like it because it's like, you know, I have a young daughter and she's like learning piano and flute and stuff, and she kind of doesn't really want to practice and things. But it's like, it's the gift you can give them to kind of push them a bit and go, no, this at some stage, you're going to have, 100%. This is going to be fun for you.
100%. I wanted to quit so much. And I remember my my mum and dad would always just be like, just go to the end of the year and then see how you feel. And they must have said that for 10 years straight. Yeah. And I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, it would suck if I'd quit. You know, I would be living a very different life. So,
was that just the piano? When did the drums come in?
I started playing drums maybe when I was 12 or something. And
Just wanted to give it a go?
Yeah, well, like the high school bands that I was in, I played drums in them, like the
right
funny kind of punk bands. We'd do like Weezer covers and stuff like that. And I played drums.
When you met Chris, what was the music you connected on? Was there songs you had in common that you both dug?
Yeah, definitely. And that was one of the things that kind of, you know, cemented our friendship, is that we were sort of into the same stuff that I don't think, well, no one else I knew was into it. And it was all sort of Warp Records and Ninja Tunes kind of, you know, that kind of like, they used to call it IDM, I think, like, I think intelligent dance music or something like that.
What's an example of that kind of sound?
You could play something from Orteca maybe. So the album that was really connecting at that time, I think, was called EP1 or EP2 or something like that.
How do you spell?
Well, there was another one, AUTECHRE. Yeah.
See, you're pronouncing it correctly. I've always called them like Orecha or something. I know I've seen that name written down, but never like.
I think it's Orteca.
Well, you've been to Berlin and shit, you'd probably know.
They're like shrouded in mystery. I think they do. I've been to one of their shows and they request complete like blackout, pitch darkness. So you don't even, they might not even be on the stage. Like it's just, it's kind of, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, right. Are they German?
No, they're from Sheffield.
Oh, right.
Or something. Yeah.
Huh.
Bristol, something like that.
It's the kind of glitchy shit was what you were into. Was that because you kind of felt like you're a bit too cool for more mainstream dance music, mate?
Well, I just gave you E17, so I don't think you could.
But I guess I
don't think I was too cool.
I think you were younger then. I think it's a thing when you're a teenager. Yeah. But like I was into Mr. Bungle and Faith No More because it was all like we wanted things to be really elaborate, time signatures and all kinds of. I don't like listen to it anymore. But you are like, this is our stuff because it's more geeky or something.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely, it's part of that. I remember at that time thinking, I will never again listen to another song that has a guitar in it as long as I live.
When did you discover like going to raves then? Did the music come first then before you went to parties?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is probably a pretty common story for Sydney dance music people, but it was really the Bang Gang parties that were the first kind of, it was the first time I went to a club and actually had fun, you know, because I liked the music and it was all over the place, really eclectic. And
so paint a picture, where was a Bang Gang party? What did it look like? What did it sound like? What was playing? What's the scene like?
So they were, I mean, the first ones I remember going to were at Moulin Rouge, which was like
in King's Cross,
in the heart of King's Cross, RIP. Mm. And I don't know, it was like, I guess because they were my friends as well. Like it was like going to your friend's house. Like I knew everyone in there. Everyone was like drunk and having fun. And the music was just like all over the place. Like they'd play Fleetwood Mac and stuff at like 3 a.m. and you just would be like, I don't know, like I just, my experience of clubs before that was going to these kind of like shitty, I don't know, like kind of almost bougie, or like people were going there to kind of like, I don't know, I guess people are going there to like try and have sex or whatever, but it's like the music sucks and it's like, I don't know, it was just a completely different club experience.
Did you like the eclecticness?
You could do whatever you want and no one cared. Yeah. And that was kind of like, fun and freeing and, so I mean, but that's probably, I would have been like 23 or 24. So it's like, until that point, I really had no interest in going to clubs in Sydney anyway.
Yeah. You were a proper music boy. You went to the Con, like our music university straight out of school, didn't you?
I went to the con, yeah. I went,
and what was your plan there? Were you going to be like a classical pianist, or were you going to be a, what were you going
to? No, I was never good enough to do that, but I studied composition and I got really interested in just like really nerdy electronic stuff. Like, ooh. I was learning Max MSP, which is like a kind of a coding thing. I mean, I wouldn't even know how to open it up now, but it was fun. I was making weird sort of like chance music stuff, and then I was building even plugins, which was pretty easy to do, and using them and stuff that me and Chris were making. So
that's like more, so as like following on from that, Orich, I'm going to pronounce it wrong every time. I'll probably pronounce it differently.
Yeah,
yeah, that kind of world of glitchy kind of avant-garde stuff?
Yeah, 100%.
Right on.
That's what I was trying to make. And
did you have idols and influences in that scene? I remember there was a night in Sydney, because I was kind of into that. There was a night called Impermanent Audio that used to be on,
okay,
and you could go and sit in Hibernian House on like the floor, and there'd be a guy at the front with like a computer or like synths plugged into each other, and there'd be like these cool sets of just super.
I'm aware of Hibernian House, but I didn't see that. I didn't go to that night. I think I had a few friends who lived in there, and they lived in rooms with no windows. It was a pretty grim vibe.
I don't know. I always thought it looked like something out of a novel. I was like, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah.
When did you start making a living from music?
So I think our album came out in, I would have been 20, our first album, I would have been 28.
Okay.
Yeah, so around then, 27, 28.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So in those intervening years, I was teaching some music at my old school. I played in this really weird like drumming band. That I just met, like these guys were my neighbors in Bondi. I met like, because I at that point I was really into like percussion stuff.
Okay.
And I used to play with them, which was kind of fun. We traveled around and like, it was mostly like these West African guys who were just like incredible, like absolute shredders on djembes. And I was just in the background playing something really simple and just getting my mind blown.
What was the lineup? Like, what kind of instruments were in the drum band?
It's all drums. It's like West African style, okay, of this like, djembes, like a lead djembe and then some other djembe guys, but not like the djembes that we think of, like from Byron Bay that like sound like a shitty conga. They're like tuned really, really, really high and they like whack, like they, it's like a whip crack. And then in the background, some dudes playing like, they call them dunduns, and they're like basically toms, I guess, with like a little bell.
Right.
And play that kind of stuff in the back. And that's like real basic. I would just play something simple and they would shred.
Skinny white guy up the back, just on the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just put him a bit further to the right. Yeah. You put him behind that pole.
I know you traveled a lot. Have you been to Africa?
I've never been. I would love to go. I have a big interest in Zimbabwean music as well. Like, I play this little thumb piano called an imbira, and I would love to go there and do that.
Well, so let's listen to some. Like, do you have any off the top of your head that you...
Just put imbira, M-B-I-R-A, and something will come up.
Let's see what this is.
That's it.
Okay. Is it like a kalimba?
Exactly.
I've got one.
Yeah, it's exactly that, but these ones are there. You didn't see me playing that in when we were living together? I would have been playing it out in the garden and stuff. It's like what you have, but it's bigger. It's got like maybe 26 keys on it, and they're in, on the left-hand side, they're in two rows.
Right on.
But it's the same principle as the, like the ones you see, and they're in like coconuts and like coconut shells.
Yeah.
With little tines on them. It's the same thing as that. Yeah.
Cool. Are they tuned?
Yep. Yeah.
To a scale that's the same as our scale, or is it a different scale?
No, it's a different scale, and they have different tunings. Like there's two main ones, but there's a few other more random ones as well. And like people will tune, have their own tunings and stuff. And one of the really cool things I find fascinating about this music is like you can play the same song on a completely different tuning and it will sound I wouldn't be able to pick it. It's a completely different song. But for them, they're like, oh, you're playing that song. You know, so yeah, it's sort of like transcends tuning in some way.
Because they're hearing like the rhythm and the changes or something as opposed to like tone.
I guess so.
When did you come round to going, oh, I want to make kind of pop music, I guess? Because it sounds like a lot of the stuff you're into was kind of not that poppy.
Yeah, it's funny. It was like I started making like bootlegs and blends and stuff. Like that was really cool at the time to make like mashups of, you know, The Cure and G-Unit and stuff. And so I would do that like sort of for fun. And then this is showing how long ago it was, but I remember like I would just burn some CDs of these blends and I would just take them down to the club where my friends were DJing and I'd hand it over and they trusted me or didn't care and they would just stick it in and play it.
What did you call yourself? What was the name of your remixes?
I didn't know. This was just like real simple blends. And then the first, like through that, we got offered to do a Sneaky Sound System remix that Chris and I did together. And that was the first thing that it was a Bag Raiders remix.
Right on. Which Sneaky Sound System song?
It was called Hip Hip Hooray or Hip Hop Hooray or something.
Okay, cool. So it's 10 years ago since you made, is it your first full-length album, Bag Raiders?
First full-length album. I think that came out in 2010.
How do you feel about that music now?
I don't listen to the album, but like I'm like at peace with it.
Do you have any like favorite songs from that album that you like particularly dig?
It's funny. I just recently I was doing these like, or at your former festival playing like kind of a classic set. And so I was like, I should play some stuff off that album and I listened back through it. And I'd completely forgotten about the first track on there called Castles in the Air or Castles in the Sky, which is kind of like a piano house thing. Mm. And so I started playing that again and that was kind of like a pleasant surprise. That's still kind of cool.
You're a guy who's always evolving, it seems to me, Jack.
I guess so, yeah. Yeah, well, you can't just like... You know, if you like the same things you liked 10 years ago, I reckon you'd be like a weird dude, you know?
So what's it like to kind of always have to always play Shooting Stars?
That's actually fine. It's like people love it so much that I wouldn't say like I love playing it, but it's like it's not a bad point of the set. It's kind of a nice point, you know?
It's
like,
joyous.
Just the reaction is so... universally just good.
It makes so many people happy, I guess.
That's right. If I stopped getting that reaction, I would stop playing it immediately. But as long as that reaction continues, like I will always play it.
Yeah. It's late and I'm awake,
staring at the I think we play it pretty much every single set we've done since it came out, you know, except at the very beginning, which is a funny story. Like we used to, I mean, this is like 2009 maybe, and we used to play like heaps of Justice and Crookers and stuff like that. And when that record first came out, we used to play it. And then when we got to the breakdown, we would mix it out because we were like, this is too poppy and like people aren't going to like this. And I really remember we were doing one show and we mixed out and then a dude came up to us and he was like, what the hell are you guys doing? Let it drop. And we were like, oh, okay, well, maybe next time we'll see how it goes.
It's funny those moments, isn't it? When I first started Hot Dub, I like the very first Hot Dub I did, because I was obsessed with mashup culture and stuff as well. I think I played Smells Like Teen Spirit and I mixed it with Red Right Hand by Nick Cave, and I was incredibly proud of the mix, because you could just like do the initial bit and then it kind of ding, 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 and then you can take a little walk to, and then like go into the thing. And I was so proud of that from a nerdy DJing point of view.
Yeah.
And one of my mates came, I was like, what the fuck? Like, if you're going to play Smells Like Teen Spirit, play the song. And I was like,
yeah, totally.
And I kind of have taken that on board ever since. Like, there's some songs, just play the fucking song. There's no need to get clever with it.
Don't get too tricky. Yeah. No one cares how good you are at Ableton. Just play the damn song.
What are you up to at the moment, mate? What kind of music are you making at the moment?
Just in the last few weeks, we've been doing some new Bag Raider stuff, actually, which has been a long time coming. I think it's taken us a while to get our head around the idea of working separately. And
is he still in America?
Like, yeah. I mean, we haven't seen each other for 2 years, so it's kind of hard to, like, you know, get the flow going. But in the last few weeks, we've both sort of been doing other stuff as well. But yeah, in the last few weeks, we've sort of cranked up the gears on that, which is kind of fun. It's exciting. It's like, I'm actually at the moment, I'm really loving a lot of dance music that's coming out for probably the first time in at least a few years. So
tell me about it. What are you loving?
There's a lot of kind of breaksy, kind of like, not breaksy as in like fuzzy breaks, but like drum break, kind of like bicep-y sounding stuff. And there's a lot of like piano house.
Can you think of any examples? I want to play some.
Yeah, there's one I've been playing. Let me just look it up so I get the remix right. It's like a Gerd Janssen. That's right, Modern Romance. It's a dusky remix of a Gerd Janssen, and Cats and Dogs song, Modern Romance.
Let's check that out. Ah, I see what you're saying about the bicep thing.
Yeah.
I do think the early piano, not that like pianos have ever really gone out of fashion in dance music. Maybe they did. Do you think they ever went out of fashion?
I mean, personally, no. But
that shiny like kind of house piano.
That
like
M1 piano.
Early 90s kind of, it does feel like it's...
Yep.
I was listening to a bit of 2010s kind of dance music stuff. It was all fucking heavy. Everything was kind of leading towards that, almost leading towards the dubstep kind of thing, because it was just getting heavier and more hectic. You weren't hearing many kind of pianos around that era.
That's true. I mean, that's like what I was saying before. It's like we didn't feel like we could play Shooting Stars in the club because it was like too melodic or something, you know? Yeah, I don't miss that stuff. I mean, there's a time and a place for like that kind of real bass heavy music, but generally speaking, like if I'm in the club, I guess this again speaks to why I like the Bang Gang Party so much, but like I like hearing songs, you know, I like hearing stuff that's kind of all over the place. It's hard for me to listen to a DJ playing like bass house for more than like 10 minutes, let alone 4 hours, you know?
Totally.
So, yeah.
How do you feel about bicep?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're great, actually. I think they're awesome. Like, I'm surprised, and I think it's cool, like, how big they are.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, it's that kind of stuff to me is interesting to listen to in the club, you know? So I'm all for it.
It is.
Like, yeah, it's repetitive, but it's, like, I don't know, rhythmically it's interesting, and there's melodies, and there's, you know...
It's such studies in minimalism to me. Like, it's wild how minimal they can make their music and get the huge reactions. You know?
Totally. It's that old thing, less is more, you know? Like, if you can nail something in 3 parts, it's going to be huge, you know?
Right on. I was listening to the best podcast on bicep the other day. Yeah, they're going through like the whole process, literally breaking down that album. It's like this groove here in Atlas. They like, you know that one?
Yeah.
They like, that was like, they made that on like a big modular thing or whatever. And it only happened once. Oh. They recorded it once. It's just like this bit of audio and they could never make it again. but it took them so long. They're like patching all these things out, and it like only exists as that one. So there's no like, there's no modulation in it. There's no going back in and tweaking parameters or whatever. It just exists as a single audio loop.
I love that. I'm trying to do that more, because it's like making music on a computer, you have so much control over everything. Sometimes you don't want that. That's just a time suck, you know? So I'm trying to be a bit more ruthless and just commit stuff, like, you know, like the old days, like just recording to tape or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, that's what it is. So make it work. I saw quite a cool interview with the dude who does all the Dua Lipa production stuff.
Right on.
Like Ian Kirkpatrick or something like that. Anyway, you could look it up. But and in that Pretty Please song, he's like accidentally recorded the bass with reverb, but only on like some of the takes. So like basically if you listen really closely, like every fourth or fifth bass note has got this massive reverb on it and the rest don't. It's the kind of thing that you would never normally do, but because it's just committing stuff, and it sounds sick.
Happy accidents. I said if we took it there, I wasn't gonna change. Great sounding song, actually. Dua Lipa is someone I should know more about. Like, I just, you know.
Yeah.
My finger is not on the pulse. Agree. The kind that's fine. Hate it when you leave me unattended. Cause I miss you and I need your love. When my mind is running wild, could you help me slow it down? Put my mind at ease. Well, did you find it in another song that you're into?
Yeah, I was just thinking, actually. So there's this song that I love called Baby Powder, and it led me on this big sort of voyage. So check out Baby Powder by Genevieve with a J.
Yep, yep. Ooh. I like that.
Yeah.
Very kind of 80s-y.
Okay, so here's the thing. I love this song. The beat's amazing. And then I was listening to a bunch of like old Japanese stuff from the 80s and 90s.
This is the kind of content I'm after, Jack.
Yeah, okay. So I think it's Last Summer Whisper. So play Last Summer Whisper by Anri, A-N-R-I.
Yeah, yeah, yep, yep, yep.
Fire it up.
Oh, so that's where the sample's from, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a full loop.
So when did this come out, though?
This is like 89 or something.
Ah.
It's crazy, hey? The cover and everything, it looks modern to me. It's like...
Yeah.
It's one of those things that comes back around.
Oh, totally. Her 80s covers are amazing. She's still making music, Anri.
That's sick.
Sampling's so wild, isn't it?
Like, yeah, I know.
Are you into You Should Be Addicted to Me? Georgia Smith?
No, I don't know.
Georgia Smith is a kind of English young, she's like Amy Winehouse but more sensible.
Okay. Too far.
Like, I love this shit much. You would have heard her. She's kind of...
Yeah, this is familiar.
She's not exactly obscure. Just gorgeous stuff. I'll never get tired of, like, women singing.
Totally.
Have you ever sung on your tracks?
Yeah, I sing a little bit. I sing live and I've sung here and there, but I kind of hate it. I especially hate singing live. There was one song, oops, I just knocked the mic. I'm having flashbacks already, trying to knock my mic out. There was one song I used to sing in the live show, and I used to like, it'd be three songs before it happened and I'd be like, fuck, it's coming up. It was just like killing my high on stage, so. Yeah, I try not to sing if possible. And lucky for me, Chris is a far better singer than I am, so.
Right on.
He has to do it.
Cool, man. In terms of like piano music, Like you're, I remember when we were living together, you just would be making music on the piano and just all the time. Is there any like musicians in that area that you really love?
I listen to, actually, this is probably when you said, what have you been listening to lately? This is what I should have led with. I've been listening to heaps of solo pianos.
I thought you might be, mate.
Heaps and heaps and heaps, yeah. That's the kind of thing that I put on in the, you know, when I'm reading or cooking or whatever I'm doing, like, because it's like not, doesn't feel like an assault on my ears, you know, in the way that listening to Bicep or something would. But yeah, so I can, there's,
who do you like?
There's so much. There's, I mean, like old school, like people like Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Say that again. Ryuichi Sakamoto.
Yeah, so he used to be in Yellow Magic Orchestra, but has done a whole bunch of like piano stuff. It's just like very Japanese sounding, and like it's beautiful.
Yeah. Very clean.
Yeah. What else? There's Harold Bard is really good. There's more. There's like a kind of a school of new guys who are doing this stuff. Like there's a guy called Duval Timothy who I really, really like.
How do you spell that?
D-U-V-A-L.
Duval Timothy. I got him, yeah.
Yeah. The album is Brown Loop.
Older Than We Used To Be. I like that. What's that one? Is solo piano?
Yep, all solo. This guy is cool. It's almost like piano with a dance music sensibility, I reckon. Like everything's in fours and eights and like it's really repetitive. And the way things come in and out, it's almost like a DAW influencing the way someone plays piano, which I think is quite cool.
There's something about solo piano that is just, it is kind of a release from, I imagine for you, from the constant sound design and layering and all that stuff.
Totally. Yeah, like I have a piano in my apartment and it's, I should play more than I do, but it's, yeah, it's a nice release just to not look at a screen while you're making music is pretty nice.
Totally. All right, Jack. What are your top five songs of all time?
Well, that's a very difficult question.
You know, of course, so I like to ask it.
Well, I'll start with, because we were just talking about him, Ryuichi Sakamoto. I think my favorite song of his is Energy Flow.
Ooh, hang on. I'll bring them up as we talk about them. Energy Flow. Oh, I love the album art. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, so nice.
Have you ever read the book of 2001, A Space Odyssey?
No, I haven't.
It's a great book. It kind of makes more sense than the movie. And he goes through all the music, like all the music that's in the film is in the book. Like he talks about why he was listening to classical music in space, because gradually he was on his own and gradually kind of he needed company in the spaceship. And originally he started off listening to big Beethoven symphonies, but all that was too chaotic. It was driving him insane. And in the end, the only thing he could listen to was Bach. And he like writes this phrase in the book that like he found refuge in the like the repetitive kind of like simple harmonies of
totally
Bach.
Like mechanical rhythms and stuff as well.
Yeah. Lovely. What's another one?
Yeah. Let's go to make sure I get the name right. But there's a Boards of Canada song. This is going back to like me in high school, like listening to this kind of like, I think it's called Roy G. Biv. Yeah, are they the colors in the rainbow?
Yeah, in order.
Yeah.
So red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet.
This bass line, so good.
So yeah, this is 98, I think.
That'd be about right, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, this album, Music Has a Right to Children, it was like, I often, if I'm asked to name one album that, you know, has been the most influential or whatever. I'll sprig for that
one. I'm gonna listen to this some more. I remember like on various chill out music compilations and stuff, I'd see a Boards of Canada song on it. But I don't think I've ever listened to a whole album. There's something rad about those 90s grooves.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it? It doesn't sound like, I guess it sounds dated, but it doesn't sound like bad, you know?
No.
And they're like their massive party trick was those like woozy synths, you know, that they did better than anyone else, that are drifting in and out of pitch, and just, it's really lush.
Lovely. Number three,
I guess we better put some Daft Punk in there.
Ooh. Excellent.
It's hard to pick though. Maybe about maybe Something About Us.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's one I don't listen to often enough.
Yeah, nice kind of slow jam. This is again like talking about music that's really simple, you know, like just when every single part is done to perfection, like you really don't need many.
Daft Punk a big influence on you?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All that French stuff, you know, like the Roulet stuff, and then, you know, obviously it probably didn't find its way into our music, but all that Justice and Sebastian stuff is what was massive in the clubs when we first started as well.
It's like so many producers of your generation that I've spoken to, they do say those names like Sebastian or whatever. It's that French sound.
Yeah, it was weird. There was some kind of underground link between Australia and France at that time where, like, I feel like they were digging our stuff and we were absolutely loving everything that they did, and there was kind of this cool synergy. Because really there wasn't that much other, you know, that kind of era of music. It was all French or Australian. I mean, in my mind anyway.
Sure.
I can't think of, there was no Americans, there maybe some other Europeans, but, you know.
It's interesting. I'm thinking of the main guy, Hugo from Flight Facilities, who also has all those links to bang gangs like you do.
Yeah, so totally.
You guys have a very similar,
I mean, he was there.
Musical
he
heritage.
Was, he was at the club always, yeah.
It's a good song. It might not
be great song. The right time.
I might not be. Did you go to the tour?
Yeah, we played there actually. Which
oh,
was
of course.
Sick. Yeah, yeah. It was cool. I mean, I think we were on some stage out the back. We weren't like, they wouldn't let us anywhere near the pyramid, but it was
it was pretty
awesome, actually.
So did you see it from side of stage? Did you get to see a little bit of the pyramid and stuff?
No, we went out. I don't know whether we weren't allowed or we just wanted to go out into the crowd, but I remember watching from right in the middle.
Yeah.
It was sick.
We were probably not that far from each other, Jack.
I
was kind of close to the sound desk. It was a real...
Oh, there was a tall guy in front of me who was plucking my beard. I want you
more than anything in my life. All right, mate. Two more to go?
Okay, cool. Let's do... There's a song called Things in Life by Dennis Brown.
Things in Life.
It's kind of like reggae, I guess.
Yeah, great.
But I love this song.
Hey! How did you come across this?
So this is in a Wong Kar-wai film. I think it's in, I forget the name. Is it Chungking Express or something like that?
Okay.
I better look that up. I don't want to get it wrong.
And you just heard it in the soundtrack. I went, oh, I'm all about that.
Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is this song? It's epic. It's not every day we're gonna be. I love this guy's voice is so, so incredible. There must be a change. All right, I got one more.
Yep.
I'm going back to Japan. So this is a guy. This guy was really influential on me, actually. Susumu Yokota. Kind of like mostly ambient, but he also made dance music as well. But this is like one of those cool stories. Like I discovered this guy because I went into a CD shop when I was like 15.
Which song? And I'll play it. Play it as you're telling the story.
So play. It's called Tobiume.
Yeah, got it.
T-O-B-I, yeah. I just saw this cover of this CD and I was like, that looks cool. It wasn't this one. It was a album called Grinning Cat. And I just bought it on spec and it just fucking blew my mind. And like, I was just thinking, when I was, you know, trying to decide what songs to pick for this, like that doesn't happen anymore. There's no, you wouldn't be able to stumble across music like that anymore, which kind of sucks, you know? Thank you. Yeah, well, he actually died like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, which is kind of shit. But yeah, he made a bunch of these just kind of ambient records like this. And then yeah, he did some kind of techno stuff as well, which I don't like as much. But there's three albums: this, Grinning Cat, another one, Something About a Thread, that I love and I listened to so much in my 20s.
Yeah.
This track, my friends just had a baby, right? And they were like, "All right, I want like all of our friends to send one track in to make like a playlist for our new baby." So like, I thought long and hard about it, and I sent them this track in the end. And they were like, "It's the one. It's her favorite track."
Oh, lovely.
I mean, they probably said that to everyone, but you know.
No, I totally. It's a beautiful thing to play to a little baby. Yeah. It's calming and it's lovely. It's all right, Jack. Well, thanks, man. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure, dude.
Just lovely to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
That's it. Thanks so much to Jack for taking part. If there was a song in there that you liked, you can find it in the Spotify playlist in the episode description. If you'd like to send me a message, I'm Hot Dub Time Machine on all the socials. And if you enjoyed the pod, tell a friend. Thanks so much. I'll see you next time. Bye.